Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we will be continuing our coverage of the Leagues of Votann with a dive into why they actually are now in the galaxy, a deeper breakdown into the individual leagues, and they now two named characters they have. 100% more.
I was about to say, codex. But wait, there's more. Yeah. Family-sized.
Yeah, we actually have two. Well, I mean, not really family-sized for either you or me, because we probably would eat that size of a portion solo.
They did add a bunch of other characters, not named characters, but they added a bunch of types of characters. I thought they're pretty cool. The new models are cool. Yeah.
The new models are cool. The Iron Jacks I'll never play in a million years I won't play until 11th edition when they get an actual functioning data sheet. It's just not impressive. I'm sorry. I saw the data sheet.
Fine.
I have no need for these. Anyway. If you like the cast and want to hear more of Brad and I, please click on the show notes to our YouTube page, the 40K Lorecast. There, there's old versions of the show converted over with imagery, our live Q&A sessions. Should have another one in, I think, November, December timeline. We're just trying to decide when it's going to be. And our other shows, the History of 40K with Brad and myself and sometimes other guests, unless someone keeps getting sick because he's kind of a weak-willed person.
You know, that's hurtful. Hurtful talk.
It's Alan. He can take it. And then Brad's other show, Two Old Men and Their Handler, which is probably going to come out at some point.
Huzzah!
In our show notes, you also find a link to our Patreon. Big thank you to the people who've been contributing. It has been incredibly helpful for us. We're able to pay audio engineers, buy new equipment, expand into YouTube, really do a lot more stuff. Even like we now have a streaming platform that we'll be able to do to start streaming games, that kind of stuff. Thanks. That's because of you Patreons. So massive thank you. For people who haven't joined our Patreon, if you want to support us for $4.99, you can join our Patreon. That gives you this show and the History of 40K completely ad-free. Or for $7.71 Australian dollars, you can also get the show ad-free, which is pretty nice. Because let's say you like national parks, bars, crocodiles, and a local newspaper that is a gem for humor. Well, then obviously you'd be living in Darwin, Australia, situated in the northern coast of the Northern Territory, because that's a good naming mechanic right there, right next to the Timor Sea. Darwin boasts a lot of nature just to take a gander at. Unfortunately, some of that nature is saltwater crocodiles, so apparently you can't really go swimming there. Fun thing to learn. But the Kakadu, someone will correct me, National Park is there, has some wild waterfalls, like weird waterfalls. Like, you guys Google this. They've got some waterfalls that are like, how is it that wide? Where is there that much water? And the best part, though, actually the reason I know of Darwin is because they have a local newspaper called the NT News, which has a history of producing front pages that look like they're almost an Onion article. So whoever is running that, if you listen to us and you know someone at NT News, let them know I'm aware of it and I appreciate it.
Well done.
Yeah. Lastly, as always, we also have a link in show notes to our Discord. For those of you who like the show and want to interact more around it, please join our Discord. It's fantastic. I see Brad and I are in there all the time. Really good place to talk about the show, ask questions, tell me what I pronounced wrong last couple episodes. It's going to be a lot. In addition, we've also got literature recommendations, gaming recommendations. We're seeing a lot of people who want to pick up this game start looking at like TTS as a thing. We actually have a whole area there to learn TTS. So if you're looking at Warhammer,
tabletop,
you want to get beyond
simulator.
It's more fun as TTS. Let them figure it out.
I they'd have to find it at that point in time.
I don't know. My child comes home from school with new crap he learned off TikTok that I have to go Google. I'm passing it on. Anyway, what are you saying? I don't know, Dad, but all the kids at school are saying it. Right, but now I have to Google it. Whatever. All right, back to the Votann. One of the main questions around the Votann and the lore has been a challenge of why they are here now and where they have been. And GW's had to kind of thread this needle pretty hard in order not to create
a massive
canon conflict. They've done it. It doesn't make a lot of sense,
well,
but they've done it.
They at least made a reason why they're going places, the more than anything. It's not been around, but they have. You know, we'll get into the bad neighborhood.
it's one of the dark, funny ones.
We went from the dark forest to the bad neighborhood.
Yeah, it's just a funny one where they had to basically be like, hey, there's like a multi-quadrillion empire that's been here the whole time. And just no one noticed it. It's been a fun, let's just say some of these notes are interesting. But we'll leave it because they write the story and I just effectively retell it with your and my take on it. So first off, one of the main canon conflicts GW had to deal with was why no one is aware of them. And they effectively went with, well, the Votann are very xenophobic. Not like exterminate all xenophobic.
I feel like xenophobic is too strong. I feel that crotchety old men that don't want to talk to their neighbors is more about it. The Imperium is xenophobic where they're killing people. The kin are just, hey, I've got all the friends I ever needed and their kin.
Yeah. The kin are like that hermit who lives on an island on the northern coast of Finland. Where it's, I want to be here. This is where I want to be. And I don't really want anyone to ever come by. And if you could all, but I have to get food. So every now and then I'll take my boat and I'll go back to the mainland and I'll get food at the store. I will give you your, whatever their currency is, doubloons. I'm kidding. I know it's euros, but it's fine. And then go back. And then I'll go back to my island. That's how the Votann have functioned forever. At the same time though, they also are very aware of the dangers of the galaxy, because with the Harnkin and everyone else going out, they're not stupid. So they do recognize that if anyone gets too close to them, deal with it. And one of the main things they've done is whenever anyone shows up in the galactic core, they just die instantly. And the goal, I think, was just to have everyone say, there be monsters over there. Let's not go there. Now,
it's so funny that they're using the 1400s, 1500s map technique to keep themselves away. The map says scary.
I think if every time someone goes in this area, it blows up, at a certain point, AdMech go, well, let's just not go there anymore. But that doesn't answer why they're here now. And the reason they're here now is simply because the galaxy's a shit show. And it's a new thing. You've got the Great Rift, Tyranid High Fleets, Necron Tomb Worlds, Waz, Black Templars are becoming an issue. We'll get to them in a second. Gene Stealer cults. All of this is now pushing on the galactic core.
Well, I think we're going to talk about the Great Rift anyways, first, because I think that's the main reason that they're interacting with the Imperium as a whole. The reason that they're interacting with all the other things we said, the Tyranids, the Necrons, the Wog, that are because they're there. They're coming to their home. Screw off. I'm trying not to die mid-take. But
it's all right. It's normal to be sick for a month.
No, it's not, and it sucks. But the Great Rift itself is ruining a bunch of the Votann's areas, and they have to find new areas because they're taking their people. Also, they've had a real thing. The Votann are not, well, you say they're not a psychic species, even though they have the Grimnir, but
Let's dive into this, the warp in them a little bit. I think this is an important detail because the problem is that, as you just said, the Votann are not a psychic species. And the Grimnir, while psychic, they're crafted to be a very specific form of psychic that actually has a barrier tech around it to keep the warp away from it. So what happens is that means there's just not been a lot of interaction with them in Chaos, except for some random Mora Harnkin outside of the galactic core. So they're not, it's not that they, I mean, the Votann can fight. You put anything there, they can fight them. But the thing was, is that the appeal of the Votann never existed to the Denzians of the warp. And because the Votann are not touched by the warp, it makes it really hard for them to create beacons within the core, which would then allow them to
exist. They could barely make incursions ever because of the fact that they don't have a big warp presence or any warp presence. But with the Rift, the Ayaterra becoming the Rift, which stretched across the galaxy, now you're getting Votann areas where the kin have to deal with demonic incursions. And the thing is that there's nothing to gain if you ruin a place for them. I do think they handle this a lot smarter than the Imperium does, because the Imperium puts their foot down, even if a planet's just completely almost absorbed into the rift. They're just like, this is mine. This is mine. I'm going to take my soccer ball and go home kind of thing. The Votan just said, this is terrible. Let's go somewhere else, which is a way better idea than just going, let's fight over this place that's going to be trash for, well, forever now, until the Necrons fix the piling it up. But
yeah. And I think that's the main thing that to focus on, is that the Votan, what we're seeing the Votan incursion, we'll get to a lot of this in a second. It's clever part of the GW. The idea is basically that due to an event happening within the core, they're having to relocate, and they're just relocating the nearest area, which is just outside the core, which is currently occupied. So we'll get to this in a second, but basically, long story short, the Votan decided the neighborhood has gone to crap and they're moving into a nicer one, whether you're there or you're not.
Kind of. Well, and they're not even doing like a very hardcore expansion. They're just kind of moving. It's just, let's call it like it is. When the Imperium meets somebody and they've said, we own all of the area around here, even if we don't haven't settled it yet, we're willing to fight and drop a hat. You know what I mean? And also, we're not sure what they are.
Yeah. But also, the Votan are conquering those planets.
Yeah.
The Votan are.
It's a Votan cast. You got to take their side in their cast. All right.
We'll get to it in a bit, but they're being dicks. I mean, they're coming out of it saying, hey, that planet looks nice. And people are like, yeah, we live here. Like,
not anymore. They're giving their own. Get your own, chump. They're kicking sand in their face.
Add a D to the end of that word because it is past tense. Now, the rift is one problem, but that's not the only problem. The next big issue is the Tyranids. And when we say the Tyranids, it's actually both Tyranids and Gene Stealers, because they're both an issue in different ways that overlap a little bit, well, as it always would be.
There's overlapping, yes, but like, the Tyranid invasion has taken out an entire league.
It took out one league, and it's obviously threatening into them a little bit more. But actually, I would argue the Geneslayer cult's the bigger issue, because the Votan know how to handle the Tyranids. They understand it's just brute force, and you can actually push a Tyranid invasion back. The bigger issue for them is the Geneslayer cults. And this is the difference, is whereas like the Tyranid fleet is an existential threat, the Geneslayer cult is more of an ontological threat. The main issue with the GSC is that they can't infect kin. Much like we've had with the orcs and Eldar, they can try, but the kin genetic code and the Votan will pick up on it in a second. So there's no Primarchs floating around inside of leagues. But it's their destructive principles are causing havoc. Because the one thing we don't talk about with Gene Stealer cult a lot is that once they infect somewhere, they also will do weird things. They'll mess with munitions. They'll mess with supply lines. They mess with stuff to make it easier for the Hive fleet to overtake it. Well, the kin are a trading people. And so now all these areas are trying to trade with, the trade's getting all jacked up and they're discovering what's really going on. And where this becomes more of an issue for the league is that effectively they go and do some trades, and then what they trade for, the goods are terrible. So now they have to declare a grudge. And now they're basically there's been some stories in the latest codex talking about them effectively carrying a grudge on a Gene Stealer cult and then hunting them down, like the entire Gene Stealer cult, a la what the Inquisition would do, and removing the entire Gene Stealer cult because they wronged them.
It's just also the best way to handle it.
It is, but it's funny, but it also takes up resources. One of the biggest problems, and we're going to talk about this more as we get further into the Votan, is they lack the resources to do the stuff that they need to do, because they don't understand how big the galaxy problems are. And while they are numerous, they're not infinite, and they're getting hit from multiple sides. For example, Tomb Worlds are another one that they've been dealing with.
It's the other thing that they also aren't telling anybody what they're doing. So let's talk about the GSC thing just a little bit, because the Imperium has cracked it back because they don't know that world is infested by Gene Stealers. They just know that the Votan are pummeling a world and killing everyone.
Inquisition will figure it out afterwards, maybe.
Votan
don't really care.
That's true.
But the next big one is, of course, the Tomb Worlds. And the Votann are at the same, I guess, back foot as the Admech are, and now the Imperium were. When we talked, we did the casts on the Pariah Nexus. We talked about this, where the Admech have been fighting the Necrons for like over 1,000 years, or maybe not that long, but somewhere in that realm, but because it was unawakened Tomb Worlds, because they were tomb raiding. And the Tomb World would awaken a little bit, and Admech had a whole plan they could wipe it out. But now they start hitting fully awakened Tomb Worlds and discover the hard way that, yeah, these guys are super technologically advanced, and there's a ass ton of them. Yeah. So the problem you're running is they start getting wrecked. The same thing's happening for the Votann. The Votann have been digging into Necron worlds forever. But now all of a sudden, as they dig into the Necron worlds, they're finding worlds that are fully awakened. In fact, there's an entire dynasty that has awakened just outside the core that's creating a big problem for them.
Oh, well, it's a big problem in multiple ways because of the fact that, one, obviously they're fighting the Necrons, but at their core, a bunch of miners, the kin want to resource collect, and they're doing all the thing, and they're counting all those things. The Necrons are grabbing absolutely everything that's anywhere near them to fuel their awakened dynasty.
Yeah, because it's just they're both going after the same resources. And the difference is the Necrons are coming in a little bit hotter and heavier than the Votann are expecting. Because mostly because don't forget, the Necrons are robotic. They can handle vacuum of space. They can handle high radiation. Their technology helps them handle the high gravity. All those things can be done. So the things that have protected the Votann in the past, if no one else could really come into this area and mine it, the Necrons can. So now they're also fighting them in an area they never fought them before. So the Necrons are causing some real, and this, again, we're going to talk more about the leagues in general. The Necrons are hitting actually one league pretty badly, and we'll go through that way. But you also have the orcs, because I like talking about orcs and Gaz. So we've discussed Gaz a little bit in the past. He is riling up the orcs pretty badly.
Also, remember, this is Gaz 2.0 with his duct taped on head over five different bodies.
Yeah.
Mad Doc basically gave him the glow up, and he's Ultra Gaz now.
And the issue with Gaz is because he's Ultra Gaz, his reach goes out into the entire galaxy. And as a result, what you basically have is the orcs who are close enough to him are going to him and joining him. But the orcs, say on the far side of the galaxy or over in the galactic core region, it's like giving a child a bag of Skittles and a Red Bull. They're just completely jacked up. And what they're doing is they're coming in anywhere and everywhere looking for a fight. And they're seeing these raiding parties everywhere. Namely, again, and these they're going to hit the Votann because, again, like the Necrons, the orcs can survive in the galactic core because they believe they can. Therefore,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And so they're coming in looking for a fight. And don't forget, the Votann have been fighting the orcs for millennia. And the second they see the orcs, they get a little uppity. So they're going right after them.
They pull out the Book of Grudges and go, wait a second. Flip back a couple pages and go, we still have some unresolved issues with these guys. Let's go ahead and be angry.
Yeah. But GW did do one good thing, and they did point out that probably the biggest problem that the Votann have is the Imperium itself. And this is because the leagues have chosen to ignore the Imperium for their entire existence. They realized a long time ago it's a dumpster fire, and they don't want to be pulled into any of that conflict. But the leagues, despite being able to mask their presence, are now being exposed because they did. They were trading with them via intermediaries. They were doing all this stuff. They were, again, blowing up and entered the core. But now they're starting to get hit on two sides. First, as Brad mentioned, they're blowing up Imperial worlds because they're getting overrun by Gene Stealer cult. But the funnier one is the Imperium is launching crusades after the Necrons, the orcs, and, you know, and some of the chaos, as you said, some of the chaos planets caught up in the rift. So now this crusade is coming rolling through town, and town includes a league settlement. And so now they're in conflict with each other. The fun thing about Imperial Crusades is when they find resistance, they don't say, oh, go around that. They just double down. And say, especially if it's Black Templar.
We've got more bodies than you.
Oh, yeah. So the Black Templar go in and all of a sudden discover there's a, you know, bunch of kin somewhere. They go, all right, well, I still have a chainsword, and they still are there, so I'm just going to use said chainsword on that thing. And now you're getting pulled into more and more conflict. We haven't gotten to all-out war yet. Again, we are in the second codex of Voten. And one thing that we should always point out is GW always has a major conflict. Right now, I think right now we're both Tyranid and Necron, I think. I mean, Tyranids were the Lich of Tenth.
You have all three. So you've got the Rift and all of the Chaos Incursion, including Demonic and CSM, Chaos Space Marines. But then you've got a Leviathan, which is the closest one to Terra. But you've got a huge Tyranid forces pushing in from all over the galaxy. And then you've got the awakening of the Necron worlds and the fact that the Necrons are finally considered a real threat to the galaxy, not just a couple dots of highly advanced race.
Yeah. It's, my point is that when we get to 11th edition or even 12th edition, it's quite possible the Votan could become, you know, the great conflict within the Imperium. Perhaps the rift gets closed and then the Votan, they both go to war with each other. GW likes this bit. They've almost done it with the Eldar a couple times and they backed off. You've seen them being like, oh, there's a major Eldar conflict with humanity. And then Eldred says, hey, let's
come on.
But it is possible, given the size of the leagues of Votan, that they could turn this into a much larger conflict. But with that, let's jump into the leagues of Votan themselves. And I'm going to just give my opinion. Unfortunately, I think the leagues are suffering a bit from modern 40K tabletop play. And what I mean by this is, up until 10th edition, each faction had specific rules after like key factions within them. So Evil Sons, your army got extra movement. Iron Hands, heavy weapons. Ulthway, that was unfair, I'll be honest. The Ulthway rules were usually just a cheat, where they're like, wait, you get five benefits? Well, yeah, of course. Tau probably have some stuff that I have no idea what it means. Literally every time I play Tau, I just go, what do these guys do? And the person tells me, they could lie. I won't know. I'll be candid. I don't know their army rules at all. Like, oh yeah, these guys are invincible and fly. Eh, that sounds right. I played against them in 8th. Okay.
Good enough.
Anyway, but in 10th edition, GW moved away from this. And the idea was good. The idea was you can paint your army however you want. Something I actually do. And not all of us have someone say, well, your army's not red, so you can't be Evil Sons. Or because my orcs are pink. And so they don't actually have an official clan. But the downside of this is some of the flavor went away.
You're going to get me on my soapbox on this, because I feel it took a lot of identity away from what you're playing. Mm-hmm. And it became a lot of generic, especially in Marines. If you're not playing a specific, if you're not playing like Wolves or Blood Angels or something, Marines became very homogenous Marines. They did this a little bit with the Votan. They have,
yeah,
Votan's they did it with strong. Eldar
too.
They did it with,
I mean, to be fair, they did it with Orcs. We still at least do have our Goths detachment. It's there. That's obviously Goths. But even the other ones aren't there. And my issue with this, candidly, was like all they had to do was say what they'd always said, which is, yeah, you can be Ultramarine, but you just be a sub-faction. And you can have whatever paint scheme you want. That's fine. You can do that. Go after it. I can be in my Orc army, who I call the Orcgasms because they're pink. I love my army. But they have, it's all pink highlights. They can still fight as Goths. They can join the Goths and fight as Goths. There's no reason they can't. And it's better to actually have the rules say Goth, because then when you write them out, your rules make a lot more sense. Whereas like in the Votan Codex, I'm looking through the leagues, I'm flipping through the rule book going, wait, I can tell which one's a Greater Thurian League, but some of the other ones, like, is this the Ymir conglomerate? Is this the Kronos Hemogeny? Like, it's just not as clean. So that's John and Brad's bitch for the day.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun.
Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Let's jump into the Greater Thurian League,
which is the largest.
AKA, yeah. AKA the white toast of the entire group.
Vanilla?
This is. What kind of ice cream do you like? Vanilla. Well, do anything on it? No, just vanilla. That's what Greater Thurian League is.
Spicy.
They're so bland. And they're meant to be. They're the catch-all. They're the largest. Their lore is good.
The default kish.
Yeah. I mean, even though their lore sucks. Who am I kidding? This is the lamest of the lore. Because they're the largest of all the leagues, which means they're the most votin. They have the most land. They're a powerhouse.
They're oldest.
Sort of, but not really. I'm just going to call this out now. They're described as the largest league with all the technology and all that stuff. And then we get to the next leagues. And they're like, oh, these guys have the best technology. And these guys have all the money. And you're like, so the Greater Thurian League is just a great big lie.
They have old money.
Yeah. And even this, so what they really are is they're the oldest of the existing leagues. We don't have a date on their founding, just they predate all the others. They could be tens of millennia old and helped found all the leagues, or they're just the longest survivor that maybe they might be 5,000 years old and everyone else is just dead.
And that's only known by the course, the Votan course.
This next bit bothers me to say it because I'm going to contradict myself in like 3 minutes. But they possess a lot of the wealthiest and largest guilds amongst the league. And the idea here makes sense. They control more land and are the largest. And so a guild, because remember, you know, all of the kin are independent. They will sign agreements and they move around, but your kin will actually change leagues. Maybe often. It's hard to really know how common this is.
It just depends on what league is most populous to what they're currently doing.
Yeah.
So if you're in the Thurians land and you're doing your work, well, you just default join the Greater Thurian.
People also go there too, where they're like, okay, hey, I'm going to go join.
Yeah.
It sounds like as I read the books, it sounds like there's almost like recruitment posters going on all over this. Join the Thurian League today.
I think that one of the biggest things though is the Greater Thurian League is straight up, we just want to get more stuff. If you want to mine, you want to get resources, you want to do whatever, we've got a place for you. That's their jam.
Yeah. I mean, it's what they remind me of is, I know you didn't play Starfield. They remind me of Starfield. The game Starfield just feels like that. Spread across the galaxy. And yeah, you want to do some business stuff? Go ahead and join that.
Capital from Mutant Chronicles. I'm going to get myself another very obscure reference.
Jesus Christ.
What?
Now, the Greater Thurian League, they're actually one of the fastest growing leagues. And this is because they control so much space and resources that they're becoming very appealing to the independent kindred. And some of these independent kindred are independent because the league they were in just got wrecked. At the same time, though, the Greater Thurian League are the most active with the Imperium. That's not in a good way.
They're active and it's not because they're sending gifts back and forth.
No, because the issue with the Greater Thurian League is that most of their holdings is in the upper right portion of the galactic core. And this is where the Great Rift runs right through. And so they've had to pack up and leave the area because they recognize when something's Sisyphean and say, nope. And they bailed.
I like this, though, because they're very, I do like this about the Votan is that they're pragmatic about this. And they went, we have nothing to gain here. We're never, this place is trash now. Even if we win, it's still ruined, you know?
Yeah, actually, but they can't win. The truth is that they're fighting an infinite force there. They don't have the ability.
Yeah. But I'm saying it's still tainted by chaos. Things have got wrecked. You know you're going to have future conflicts. So they're just like, yeah, I'm out, man. And that,
yeah,
it does make more sense that, you know, to do that. As someone that's by heart part of the Imperium, the Imperium just doesn't do that. We blow up shit before. If we can't have it, nobody can. But they just left.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they packed up and left. To be fair, what they left is a big rock. It doesn't really matter that much. They're not leaving like a lot of stuff behind they care about.
Let's talk about why it's bad for the Imperium, because they went, screw you guys, I'm going home. They decided that their home was someone else's home and showed up to the very next sector, basically, and went, all of this stuff is now ours. And beat the crap out of the local Imperium.
Well, yeah, this part's fascinating, because what's happened is, as we've discussed before, the Imperium has been trading with the leagues forever. They assumed they were a small a small race, especially the worlds just outside the galactic core, obviously. And you have Imperial governors and whatnot who just, you know, didn't tell anybody, because I don't want to tell them where our stuff's coming from, but I've got this great trading partner. All of a sudden, that trading partner shows up with a fleet larger than the Imperium's fleet, as far as you're concerned, and conquers your planet.
And takes quickness.
Everything from you. And having this, the Imperium's having to recognize pretty quickly that what they thought was a small nomadic people is actually a catastrophically large.
It's an empire.
Yeah. Now, that's the Greater Therian League. Again, milk toast, bunch of Votan. We do trade. We do mining. We do all these things. They don't really specialize in anything. The next one we'll cover does specialize, and that's the Ymir.
Used to have such great rules when they first came
out. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were good. Now they don't actually have rules. I cannot figure out which of the new ones is them. I flipped through the codex, no idea. But I assume it's Ymir. I actually don't know. I haven't listened to an audiobook on this, so I'm making it up as I go along. But the Ymir conglomerate, they're known for technological superiority as well as incredible wealth, because the Greater Therian League are known for their massive wealth holdings and their great technology and weaponry. And the Mir conglomerate are known for that, but more.
It's so stupid, now, whatever.
The Ymir conglomerate, they're unique to the other leagues in their technology. While all the leagues have the same tech, technically, the Ymir's tech is just a little bit better. They don't explain why, by the way. They just say that it's better. What I like about the Ymir is the way that they're structured, because they barter through trade, but also through membership. So the Ymir draw in, because as we said, it's all volunteer. To be part of a league, you volunteer to be part of the league. And the Ymir draw in two groups. First, they draw in the best smiths in the galaxy. So if you're a Brokir.
I say they want the best Brokirs. And I do think it is funny that they trade for this. They're like, hey, I'll give you this, but I need Ted and Billy to show up and work for us. And you're like, what? But
it's also what they do is, but Ted and Billy will also come to them and join them, because they're saying, hey, I'm this incredible smith and I want to really blow up and do even more with my stuff. I think I'm good enough to be a Ymir. And then Ymir's like, all right, let's try you out. And they'll come in and they'll actually end up joining them and their kin will come and join the Ymir conglomerate. But at the same time, you also have people who are the inverse of that. People who are, I am not a good weaponsmith. I am not a good smith in general, but I can mine and I can really mine and I need technology. So the Ymir is this weird thing where, yes, they're known for being this incredible boom of technology, but their wealth comes from a lot of the best mining guilds and all of the kin join them because it's a great symbiotic relationship. I'm going to go get you raw materials and you're going to give me cool stuff. One of the things about them is actually, it's written in the codex, they have some of the most luxurious facilities of all the Votan, but call out luxurious for a very grumpy dwarf. Like, it's like, it's just not a, oh, feather down sheets. No, this is a, there might be a sheet on the bed, or the technology of the replicator makes food that's, you know, not rancid. So better than an imperial planet, but not better than all the imperial planets. The Ymir, the story on them of where their expansion is, they're coming out of the galactic core. Unlike the Greater Thorian League, who are trying to conquer more land, the Ymir are actually having the problem of they need resources.
It's supply lines, though. They got their supply lines cut. So they're basically trying to battle supply lines back.
Now, the fun thing about the Ymir is their technology is, in the lore, better than everybody else's. They have their weaponry is better, but it's all a technology. And they have one of my favorite stories in the Codex. It's as I said before, I read the Codexes and these little one paragraph bits. And what it talks about is that there were some Imperial soldiers on a planet were hunting down warp creatures that had appeared in the planet. And while hunting them down, they found the creatures were going underground. So they went underground. And while underground, they opened up and found an entire mining operation of the Ymir that was going on under the planet surface. And the Ymir then looked up and saw the humans and went, all right, just shot them all. Like, I'll solve the problem. Figure, no issue. But they radioed up. So now there is a war going on underneath, and I forget the name of the planet, between the Ymir and the Imperium, as the Imperium don't know why they're there, but do know that they are digging out the base of their planet, and that's totally not cool. But I did like that. By the way, they also said this mining operation had been there for decades, and no one noticed. So pretty good technology. But from there,
we should eventually talk about the fact that they do have cloaking technology that they don't really use in the game, which kind of makes me mad.
I would say the Votann are on a weird arc. If we're going to talk about their technology, much like the Eldar, and they took the GW candidly quite a few editions to realize that, hey, if you put stuff in the Codex and the lore, you need to make it on the tabletop. And for a lot of times, they would say, yeah, we'll go ahead and do that. And then all the player base went, if you give another stupid model this stupid rule, I'm never playing this stupid game again.
Right? I got you on that. But it's just like they reference it quite a bit because they use it as the catch-all for why the hell did no one notice these guys?
Right. And you and I both in 8th edition ran a Latok Eldar.
I would have never done that.
Yes, you did. Oh, really? The minus one to hit? You never, not one time.
Not even once.
I can pull your lists. We both know you
did. Not even once.
Look, these guys are minus four to hit. Yeah, that's because so GW dumb. Went, well, that rule makes sense. And then there's the rule on the Leviathan Dreadnought as an Iron Hand, which did make sense from a lore standpoint. It did make sense from a lore standpoint.
Oof. Made sense for me to punch people in the head.
Oof. That thing was rough. But all right. But from there, let's go on to the Trans-Hyperion Alliance, which I like a lot. Again, only in the lore, though, because on the tabletop, I stand by.
I was just about to say they're awful.
Harnkin are useless on the tabletop, but in the lore, they're awesome.
Well, they're the original, they're in charge of exploring.
Well, and I realize the problem with them and why they suck on the tabletop, these are the rogue traders of the Leagues of Votann. And as much as I like my Imperial Agents army, Imperial Agents only win tournaments because someone finds a weird interaction. They are a bad, bad faction. Bad
they're
faction.
They're not a faction.
Fine. They're bad. But
I know, but broken. All right. We're not going there again. I'll rage out.
Let's go into this. So the Trans-Hyperion Alliance is made up of all Harnkin. And they're actually almost, in fact, in order to be part of the alliance, you have to spend some time as a Harnkin. It's a requirement to join their alliance. And as a result, they are the most nomadic league by a wide margin.
It's not even close.
Yeah. And their scout vessels are scouring both kind of the roughest part of the galactic core, because they actually also go into parts of the galactic core like, oh, that's where the black hole is. That's what Trans-Hyperion are. But they're also on the other side of the galaxy looking for stuff.
Well, they're wayfarers. They're awesome with that. I think they're super cool about that. Is they're trying to find new things. They're trying to explore all the time. And they're kind of pulling the grumpy old dwarves with them when they find the new things.
Yeah, and I like the way that they're set up, because what they do is they move around the galaxy, and when they find a area ripe for, I guess we'll call it extraction, whatever you want to call the mining situation, they reach out and an entire mobile fleet will show up and begin mining it out. What this results in is cool is that they are the most spread out of all of the Votan. So on paper, like, oh, they are the largest. But if you look at it, there's massive voids between each of their holdings. They're just, it's not really a congruent league, whereas the rest of them have almost defined edges and defined territory. The Trans-Hyperion Alliance is just all over the place.
It's like dots on the map all over the place.
Yeah. But what I like about them a lot is that they're also the most respected of the leagues. They're not the wealthiest. They're not the most militarized. They don't have the best technology, but they're highly regarded because they're the ones finding new things. Because remember,
we talked about this in the previous cast, which is they're doing a job that nobody else wants.
Mm-hmm. And unlike humanity and some of the other groups, especially the Necrons, who are in it for themselves more often than not, the leagues are in general in it for each other. And so when the Trans-Hyperion finds a new area, they don't just share it with themselves. It's shared with other leagues, with mining guilds, etc. So they're viewed as kind of as an ally. In fact, all the leagues view each other as allies, which is important versus some of the other people in here. Another key part of the Trans-Hyperion Alliance, and this does not translate to the tabletop at all, by the way, is that they constantly find themselves at war with larger forces.
Wildly larger forces, by the way. Because they go find places that already have a whole bunch of people already there.
Yeah, and in the lore, the Trans-Hyperion Alliance is written that they have some of the best warriors and fleet captains in the entirety of the leagues of Votan, because they've just had to constantly fight uneven battles and escape or win. That does not translate at all, because they just get rumple-stomped to the tabletop. It's also quite likely that the Demiurge was the Trans-Hyperion Alliance. Those are the ones who did the most trading. When they describe the Trans-Hyperion Alliance as traveling around with a mining operation that would just go in, that is how the Demiurge.
Yeah, but the thing is that 40K doesn't have in the core game, doesn't have space battles. So you'd have to go into, I think they should be better in that. If you're playing the new version of Battlefield Gothic and stuff like that, the Trans-Hyperion should have wild ships.
Well, the Trans-Hyperions are also the ones who have the spectral arrays. And those are useless. One more really key thing, the Trans-Hyperion Alliance, they have 3 Votan cores, which is more than any other league.
I was just saying, it's wild.
The Greater Therian, Greater Therian don't have that many. And their cores are all linked via a galactic network. So despite the fact the Alliance is spread out, those cores all talk to each other, and the cores know the exact location of every kin.
I kind of wish they would talk about this a little bit more, because Votan have instantaneous communication.
Yeah, so the Necron.
Without warp, yeah. Well, I'm saying they have Necron so technology. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying.
Humanity had that technology, and then things went south.
And then we didn't.
Yeah, and then things went south. But one issue GW had in designing the Votan was they made them look like dwarves. They made them mine and harvest like dwarves, but they also need to make them grumpy like dwarves. And that's where Urani Suter Regulus. Why not? URSR. We're going URSR from here on out. That's where they come in. These are your traditional fantasy dwarves.
This is why these guys are the best.
Yeah. Again, terrible rules. But they are holding, and they are holding, the ground on the edge of the galactic core. They constantly find themselves.
I would say versus everyone. Just check all. They're fighting, and also they are writing down grudges against every single one. I was going to leave, but you told me to leave, and now I'm not going to. Like, you have nothing to gain by staying here. I'm going to stay here forever, even harder.
Well, they do have a lot to gain by staying, and we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that, yes, but I'm saying, but there's a lot of these fights where you're like, you guys could give ground and come back and totally win. They're like, I'm never giving an inch, ever.
Yeah, the URSR are masters of grim resolve. They take on all these attacks. This is their Necrons, the orcs, random Xenos, even humanity are coming after their area. And every time they just go, nope, declare a grudge and eliminate them. That was fun. What's odd about the URSR is that they're sitting right at the apex of the attack. So they're at an intersection point where the Samka, Necron dynasty is fully awakened and coming after them, and they're assailing them really heavily. Most other leagues in this exact scenario would have done the Oregon Trail and just bailed out because they don't want dysentery. The URSR, they're holding their ground and refusing to give up. And this is, they're also getting the same hit. There's orcs coming in there, and there's some Imperium pushing. The other leagues, this is...
They're also getting assaulted by all four Chaos Gods.
Yeah. And the other leagues are looking at them going, they're being weird. And this is cool. This is an adaption as we've gotten further into 10th edition, where they've added a lot more lore here. Originally, they were just gossiping that they had some silly grudge that they'd made, that they, and they couldn't see the truth of the folly of their ways, how it was written, and they were holding the ground. The real reason is the URSR carry secrets. So, for example, one of the biggest notes on URSR is no kin have ever joined a URSR and left it. That is a common thing throughout the leagues of OTAN.
Wildly common.
Yeah, and there's no animosity for doing it, by the way. It's not like you're breaking up with somebody. You're just going, okay, I'm going to go change jobs. That's how it's always viewed. But when a kin join the URSR, they take part of a secret ritual in which they swear an oath and they never leave. So it was rumored by the Grimnir that the URSR possess some great knowledge they can't share.
Let's give the Brad. I got a Brad theory on that one. Because I've thought that, because we talked a lot about you thought that they are the good guys, but they'll end up being corrupted, like the Tau ended storyline ended up being corrupted. I think that they know something about the Votann cores.
Yeah. So let's dive into what they do know. Maybe. So this, the URSR, candidly, guys, this is, if GW wants to, this is the league they're going to lean into to advance the lore around this and really create a lot more mystery.
And make
Black
it,
Library
make
books.
It dark, though. Yeah.
It can go multiple ways, actually. The URSR, because they have a key thing. There's something that they discovered. And they discovered an artificial planet in the middle of their holdings that's at least 20,000 years old. In it, there's an AI there that they've named the Somnet. And this AI dates back to the golden age of technology.
Let's just say they discovered it. It's fully functional.
It's fully functional.
It is.
Now, you say it's fully functional, but it's not talking. It's actually asleep. So it's not broken, but it's not, well, or is it? And this is where this whole thing becomes interesting. I'm giving you what it says in the Codex. In the Codex, they've been trying to waken the Somnet for thousands of years, and it has not awoken. They know if it does awaken, this thing would have more knowledge about the universe than anything but maybe the Eldar. Because it dates back to a time when mankind first settled the galaxy. It has all that information. It also hasn't been corrupted like the leagues of Votann are, like the Votann cores are, who've been just getting this endless amount of data dump from a guy who's like, yeah, and then on my 7th birthday, I had a sandwich for lunch. And that's now loaded into the middle of the core. That's why these cores aren't functioning. Like, I have important information. I know what mayonnaise tastes like. That's not helping anything we're trying to do. But there's a kilobyte. By the way, I did like that your network is struggling. I would be like, so is Brad. So now, where this is interesting for me is, if, how is this better? Where this is interesting to me is right now it's written that the Somnet is not speaking and is silent. GW can go multiple ways with this.
I think it is. That's my whole thing.
Well, that's my thing.
They're saying that it's not, but I think that they know secrets about the cores that are not beneficial. You know, they're bad news.
It could be that. This is why I love this so much.
That's just a Brad theory. You know.
Oh, and of course, yeah. What's so great about this is you could go, I mean, just think about it. It could be, yes, it is awakened. It's told them that there's an issue with the other cores. Or it does awaken in 11th edition. It awakens and gives them key information on how to shut down the rift. Or it does, this gives GW, it's why I like this writing mechanic. It gives them a flexibility in advancing the lore of the Votann that they weren't going to get otherwise. Because before, anything they did was, well, why did you do that before? Now they've got this really great thing. So
let's throw GW a bone on this one, because the fact that we sometimes give them shit. Gav talked about this
sometimes.
A while. Yeah. No, I'm saying, Gav had a good thing about this where he threw it out and they were talking, I think it was either Gav or Jervis, whatever, one of the two. And they were talking about how sometimes you have an idea and you just throw it out there for future writers to develop and you don't step on it. You leave it open, but you leave it a cool concept to go from there. So I just like when you go, hey, this is the thing. The Horus Heresy came out of that. You know what I mean? There's a lot of different factions that came out of this and good storylines. And I like where it's go. I like where it could go, what you're saying. It leaves exactly. It very open.
The one knock I'll make on the URSR is they're effectively like a lore leak. Their function in the game is minimal because, like, what makes them special? They're stubborn and they have a bunch of secrets. That's not a tabletop rule.
No.
Now, you know who is a tabletop rule? The Chronos Hegemony. They are a tabletop rule because the Chronos Hegemony are not very hard to diagnose. They're not very secretive. They're less than 1,000 years old, and they were created when a fiend of an ancestor core became self-aware. And the Chronos made their own league around that and decided one simple thing. We need to have more us. So let's go take it.
It's not even just more us. They need to have more us. And to get more us, we're just going to fight.
Yeah. They are the most warring version of the leagues at a level that's actually going to cause some problems for them. So and it makes sense. You're an emerging league. You have to go stake your claim. And so they are referred to as having an aggression uncommon within many of the leagues of Votan. And they basically spend all their times in battle against every other species in the galaxy. They are, in effect, the BL-10 of the leagues.
But they're even worse because they're also talking shit about it because they're throwing grudges like it's candy.
Well, yeah. And one of the areas that cause issues is they also are one of the only ones who are known to fight other kin.
Not in full-blown wars or anything, but still, it's pretty crazy. Yeah,
They will have declared grudges against kin, against other kin. They're small ones. It's more border conflict things, but they are very territorial. And again, much like with URSR opening up the door for GW to expand on the leagues, the Chronos give you the answer of like, hey, right now, you know, leagues of OTAN are pointed very efficiently within GW. So I'm going to play mirror matches. I thought they all knew each other and would never fight. It's fine. One of you is Chronos Hegemony, whether you know it or not.
Yeah. Also, the fact that they have their strategy rolls around the fact that they're Globo Jim. We're better than you, and we know
it. They're fantastic. And what makes the Chronos really interesting to me is that they're not doing, when we call it about BL-10, the BL-10 are trying to just protect Eldar Holdings. That's really more what they're doing. The Chronos are basically saying, no, I'm going to prove I'm better than you. Actually, this is your faction, isn't it? But this is the Pollyanna complex. Do you want to just pause?
Nope.
Do you want to pause?
Nope.
Nope. All right, let's enjoy your last cast ever.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that was mean. Yeah. All right. In order to join the Chronos Hegemony, the best way to explain the aggression of the Chronos Hegemony actually is in what you have to do to join them. When you join the Chronos Hegemony, you have to pay a tithe to them. And not the Imperial tithe, where it's, hey, here's a percentage of our earnings. You have to bring to them conquered worlds and systems. That's how they're expanding so quickly.
This is so wild also because other leagues don't even understand what the hell they're doing, basically, because this is so not kin.
Yeah, effectively, the problem, and this is an interesting thing, the kin in general have almost an unwritten rule of your aggressive is defensive. If someone wrongs you, get them. But there's no reason to go and take. Why bother? Chronos have a problem there. They need to take. So what they do is they mark anything anyone does against them as the ultimate slight so they can go conquer them. And so the Chronos Hegemony is constantly declaring grudges, mostly against smaller Xenos. It's called out in the codexes, smaller Xenos that are nearing their space. And they will just go, oh, you flew too close to one of our ships. Therefore, all of you should die. And they go to the planet and wipe them all out and take the planet over.
Like, how dare you use the color yellow? You're like, what?
Yeah. Your email to me was in Arial font, not Times New Roman. That is, therefore, I declare a grudge on you because you did that out of the disrespect of me as a person.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're doing. And even the other leagues are getting a little bit uncomfortable with how the Chronos are functioning because it is drawing a lot of attention over there.
It's drawing attention, but also they feel like they're using the grudge as a not grudge. Like, that's not a grudge. And you're soiling my good name, sir.
But also at the same time, all of the kin have an unwritten mutual protection pact.
Yeah.
So should the Kronos find themselves at war with the Imperium, all their leagues will join in. So that, I think, that's all the leagues, guys. Will we get more in the coming years? Yes, but those are all the leagues. Again, go ahead and make your own. You don't have to make one of these because you can actually make your own guys, their own kin, and they can be in one of these leagues or in a different league, because in 10th edition, leagues don't matter. You just get to be whatever the freaking dumb rule is. Sorry, I'm not over it. But we do have two named characters. One is new and one is old. And old by, he's a couple years old. I like the new one. I don't like the old one. So we're going to start with a new one because I find him much more entertaining. And then we'll get to the old one. I'll make Brad talk about that one for a bit. And then, we'll go there. So in general, when GW gives us a named character, they usually give us pretty cool stories and lore around them. Unless it's a Space Marine captain or lieutenant, because there's 8,000 of them.
There's so many.
Right. Now, one of the cool things they did was this guy named, this is going to be rough. This guy named Bjuri Agernesson, and his history is cool. So as we covered before, there's a Tyranid tendril hit the core, and one of those tendrils took out the League of Emberg Einar Block. Sorry, guys, we're at the end of the cast. I'm getting a little bit tired, and now I have to pronounce all this stuff that I can't pronounce. So
love it.
Here we go.
You started off trying to say Sawtek was something insane, so I thought that was the highlight so far.
No, it wasn't Sawtek. It was Somnotek. There's an M in there for some reason. It's not Sawtek. I would remember it. It was like Somnotek. Like, oh, yeah, you know them. All right, but the Ember Einger Block, we covered a bit in the last cast because they're the ones who got attacked by a hive fleet. They threw their entire population to defend the core, and the Tyranids ate the population and then moved on and left the core alone because they don't want to eat the core. What's interesting, though, is, and this is exposed a bit more about the function of the cores, the core went insane. The loss of the kin around it and the interaction, apparently the cores do have a symbiotic relationship with the kin. With them all gone, the core actually went insane to the point where when other kins went there to go rescue the core attacked them. And it's basically labeled as almost corrupted, but not scrap code style corrupted. It's gone completely insane. Cool little story there. But there's a story occurs where another high fleet is attacking and the local league there or kindred there are packing up to leave. They realize we can't beat this thing. We got to get out of here. And a ship appears in orbit. And the ship is described as covered in acid. And out of the ship comes Bjuri Agnarsson. And because he has declared a personal grudge against the Tyranids. Not High Fleet Leviathan, not High Fleet Behemoth.
No. Tyranids.
All of them. Yeah, Tyranids. Every Tyranid, I have declared a grudge against every Tyranid. And he's going to personally punch each and every one of them right in where, if they had a dick, where that would be. He is coming for it. And I like the way he appears, because his ship appears, the doors open, him and a bunch of warriors who are best described as Death Watch during War of the Beast, because they're all different leagues. Some of them are heavily injured. All their armor's damaged.
Oh, they said almost all of them. They're supposed to be this ragtag, most scarred. Yeah. They kept talking about the scars and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're beat up. And they came out on a mission to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and they forgot all the bubble gum. They then go on a beating mission. And there's boots and mighty ass kicking. We're going to do all of our catchphrases back to back here. Oh, and YOLO swag. There you go. I got all of them.
My boots and mighty ass kicking, baby.
Yeah, we got all of our catchphrases in one. They go into this fleet. The highlight is, I'm just going to go with Bjuri himself, jumps on it doesn't describe which Tyranid it is. They just say it's the largest beast. He basically went, who's the biggest dude here? And I found it, and he jumped on its back and beat it to death. And then after beating it to death, his warriors turned the tide, and this organized retreat that the local league was doing turns into a full-blown offense, and they actually destroy the swarm. After which, Bjuri and his friends leave to go conquer more of a threat. They still are looking for their bubblegum.
They have continued to just rock solid with this, though.
Which, by the way, I didn't realize till the other day that They Live is Rowdy Roddy Piper. I was like, oh. Anyway, side note. But let's finish up with
Uthar the Destined.
He's so lame. I'm just in comparison to Fury. He is. Okay, let's go through it. Uthar the Destined.
All right, first off, he's super long lived, and they were starting to wonder about the fact, is he actually destined? And then the rift opened, and he starts rocking chaos.
Let me do his origin story, because I hate it. So the story on Uthar the Destined is there was a crucible birthing, and around the crucible birthing, a bunch of the machinery all around it began acting weird, and they'd never seen this before. And then Uthar was born, and the Grimnir and the other overseers were like, this person, is he a magical child? Is this not a child? He's an adult. And at the same time that he was birthed, one of the other crucibles made a sword. Now, this is why I hate this story. Because the story is they made him and they made a magical sword at the same time. So they must be destined together. And so right after his birth, and because they do birth as full-blown adults, he picked up the sword and was going to lead the Greater Thurian League to greater victory. And now fast forward, I don't know, 1,000 years, and there really hasn't been a lot of great victories, and he's still got this sword. And now people are asking questions of, well, is he really that special?
But maybe then he started isn't. To be special because in the battles of Torg, he dueled, what was the world leader lord?
Yeah, sure.
Hakatar. Yeah, it was Hakatar.
Okay.
Whatever. I could have looked this up, and instead I'm doing it on memory, baby. But he's had some epic chaos battles. We talked about the Great Aetherian losing a bunch of stuff because of the rift coming out.
All right.
Bunch of huge counterattacks. Torg being one of the biggest ones.
My dislike of him, candidly, is just, it's a lot of trope. It's this piece of he was destined. Is he destined? He was born the same time as a sword. Like, I just, my complaints around him are purely around, it just feels very trope-esque to me. Whereas, you know, my boy, Bari, has a real purpose. And his purpose is beat up all the Tyranids. And that's where Uthar
shows up with, he has better stuff around him. I'll give you that. Uthar was he's supposed to be the guy that's stopping the chaos rift and battling against the unimaginable evil.
No, he's also the guy, he's also the guy leading the fight against the Imperium. He's also the guy leading the fight against Necrons. It's my thing about him is I would prefer, this is more of a me thing, I prefer my characters to have a bit more of a narrow focus and be more lasered into that.
I'll give you that. Well, he was also like, the only dude for in the beginning.
Oh, exactly, yeah. And that's why, I think, again, that's why he's milquetoast to me. Whereas, you know, Eldar, that's why I find we've lost him at Urien. Not Urien, but with Eldar. With
Ezreal Vect.
So, like, with Eldar, we have Prince Uriel. He's a very narrow-focused character, but he's light years important. I like that stuff. It's more interesting to me than, like, I am here to lead all of the Votan. How many are there?
I'll concede that point because he is everywhere against everyone. If they made him just the chaos guy, he would be more interesting.
Oh, yeah. If he's the guy who's like, hey, I have a plan and follow me, guys. I stole some stuff from the Necrons. We're going to make some Blackstone. He could be awesome in that regard. Yeah. But instead, it's, oh, yeah, wherever I have to be, I'm also there.
But his biggest claim to fame is all the chaos stuff, so they should have focused him on that.
They will. We'll get an 11th edition codex. We'll see. They'll add more stuff. But I think at that point, before Brad dies on me today,
I'm really here, guys.
Oxygen's going into my body and moving around is overrated. You're not purple in the plus side because we're doing this on film. So, all right. But next week, we're going to obviously leave the Votan behind, move on somewhere else. And I'm going to finally do what everyone's been yelling at me for a little bit.
Sharks.
My son's into sharks because he's at that age. So you know what? I'm going to be into sharks. We're doing the Carcharodonts. They are weird. They are wild, and we're going to have to spend a lot of time, I think, discussing if you want to build a Carcharodon army, can you have Primaris? Because I really don't know.
Also, they fight everyone kind of a lot.
They're super cool. I did like the book where they're fighting the Night Lords is a really cool book. we'll dive into this a lot, guys. Carcharodons are super fun. I know a lot of you like them. A lot of you want to know more about them. Yeah, to be fair, them or Minotaurs, if I were building a Space Marine army, I'd probably paint one of those too. I like them. Silver Skulls are okay. But anyway, with that, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.